We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Go episode 807 of the Al Galdi podcast. It is Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. It is the final day for pre-draft visits for draft prospects in the 2024 NFL draft to NFL teams. And how about how our Commanders are doing their final batch of pre-draft visits in preparation for their number 2 overall pick in the 2024 draft? If you've been following the reporting on this, it had become confusing with all of the quarterbacks and players, period, who the team reportedly was going to be hosting for pre-draft visits this week. Confusing as in multiple players were said to be visiting with the team at the same time. Didn't make much sense. Well, now it does make sense. Multiple reports on Tuesday morning that the Commanders, starting Tuesday evening and into Wednesday, were hosting not one, not two, not three, but 4 quarterbacks at once for pre-draft visits. North Carolina's Drake May, LSU's Jaden Daniels, Michigan's J.J. McCarthy, and Washington's Michael Penix Jr. Yes, all 4 at once. All 4 competing with each other at once. And it's not just that. I read to you this from NFL insider Albert Breer of the MMQB, a post on X on Tuesday morning. Quote, new Commanders GM Adam Peters is bringing the idea with him from San Francisco, where the 49ers would host large groups of prospects on 30 visits. Idea is to see them interact with peers. As for the number, around 20 prospects are tentatively set to be in Ashburn tomorrow, end quote. Well, tomorrow now is today. The visits reportedly are happening with managing partner Josh Harris, general manager Adam Peters, and head coach Dan Quinn all taking part, although the reporting on Harris's involvement is that he's there for observation and support. But what kind of a game is Adam Peters playing? What kind of a sick, twisted, next-level manipulation game is Adam Peters playing with these prospects? I love it. I love it. This is like a reality show, you know? This is like The Bachelor. Not that I would ever watch The Bachelor. No, really, not that I would ever watch The Bachelor. But this is potentially groundbreaking from our football team. How often have we said that? Hello and welcome to this Wednesday installment of the Al Galdi podcast. You know, it says a lot that the media did not have anything close to full clarity on what the Commanders are doing with these last pre-draft visits until the team itself pretty clearly revealed or at least confirmed what it was doing, and on the day of what the team was doing. All of these reports came out on Tuesday morning at about the same time. And in the same way, the word choice that was used by reporters in their posts on X was all very similar, indicating that the reporters all got the intel from the same source. Adam Peters and company continue to play things very close to the vest. The team continues to control the message. Well, next segment, a great guest for part one of a two-part conversation. You might say a two-part extravaganza. Pro Football Focus lead NFL draft analyst Trevor Sikkema. He's one of my favorite NFL draft analysts, and we in this part one of our conversation are going to conduct an in-depth breakdown of Drake May versus Jaden Daniels. Trevor prefers May over Daniels, and actually, by a considerable amount, Trevor is going to explain why, and that explanation is going to include him exposing some myths that too often get stated in the May Daniels debate. Trevor also is going to assess the biggest perceived negatives with each guy. Why should the Commanders, with their number two overall pick in the 2024 draft, take Drake May and not Jaden Daniels? Find out next segment, courtesy of Trevor Sikkema. Also on the show, I will properly salute the Capitals, who have made the Stanley Cup playoffs, a 2-1 win at the Philadelphia Flyers on Tuesday night to conclude the Caps regular season and to clinch the Eastern Conference's second and final wild card spot. This is the most improbable playoff season in Caps history. I shall explain why. I'll talk Nationals, a late night on Tuesday night lost at the Los Angeles Dodgers 6-2. And I will discuss the Orioles, who continue to mash. The O's now have hit exactly 3 home runs in each of the team's last 4 games, an 11-3 win over the Minnesota Twins at Oriole Park at Camden Yards on Tuesday evening. Before we get to some feedback, another big transfer acquisition for Maryland basketball. The Terrapins are getting 6'4 South Florida transfer Selton Miguel, who for this past season was the AAC's Sixth Man of the Year and Most Improved Player. So the Terps in this transfer season now have 3 major acquisitions: Belmont guard Jacoby Gillespie, Virginia Tech guard Rodney Rice, who was a 4-star recruit out of DeMatha Catholic High School in Hyattsville, Maryland, and now Selton Miguel, who also is a guard. Terps head coach Kevin Willard did not have his best season this past season, that is true, but he is doing some good work via the NCAA transfer portal. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Feedback on the Commanders on Monday afternoon announcing the hiring of this guy, Dave Gardy, as Senior Vice President of Football Initiatives, in yet another instance of managing partner Josh Harris spending on infrastructure in a way that our team's previous lead owner, Dan Snyder, never did. Dave Gardy spent the last 21 years working in the NFL's league office. He, per a press release from the Commanders, quote, will handle a number of in-game management duties and will support the coaching staff and front office on compliance with league protocols, officiating trends, and health and safety guidelines, end quote. Commanders insider Nikki Javala of the Washington Post, in a post on X on Monday evening, said that Gardy is expected to be on a headset during games. This guy could provide the team with a real competitive advantage. From J.W. Cannon on X, shifting funds from paying lawyers to paying for administration. Love to see it. I might even start calling them the Commanders here soon. Thank you for that, JW. Hey, I'm sure that the team president, Jason Wright, would appreciate that.
There it is.
Yes, Jason, there it is. From Samuel on X, I have never been so excited about our front office and infrastructure moves. Bobby Bethard was the last time that I felt good about our front office. There's no blind optimism anymore. Thank you for that, Samuel. Email from Stanley Evans on the Commanders and legendary former Redskins safety Sean Taylor. Right, Stanley? Always love the pod, Galdi. Shifting gears from the draft, shout out to Allen Iverson, the 757's own, along with Michael Vick, Plaxico Burress, and others. I saw that Iverson got a statue and that Josh Harris was present. The statue seemed a little small, but maybe that was because it was Iverson's famous crossover. Now it's Harris's turn to fix the all-time disaster of a memoir to Sean Taylor. Harris knows by now how much Sean meant to this city and this fan base, and still does do the right thing and unveil a new statue that everyone can be proud of. Although I'm sure that the Taylor family probably wants to put it all to rest at this point. And maybe the current display was what the family wanted. If so, then let it be as it stands. Thank you for the email, Stanley. Yeah, the Philadelphia 76ers this past Friday honored Virginia native and Georgetown product Allen Iverson with not what is being called a statue, but a sculpture. So that would explain why it looks small. The unveiling ceremony happened on what is known as Legends Walk at the Penn Medicine Philadelphia 76ers training complex, and present at the ceremony was Sixers managing partner and Commanders managing partner Josh Harris. I gotta tell you, when it comes to Sean Taylor, I really think that the team just needs to let him rest in peace, okay? Few things with our team over the last few years have been worse than these butchered tributes to Sean Taylor. October 17th, 2021, the then Washington football team got hammered by the Kansas City Chiefs 31-13 at FedEx Field. The game took place during Washington's annual alumni homecoming weekend. It was the game at which Washington retired Sean Taylor's number 21. Washington, incredibly, did not announce that it was retiring Sean's number 21 at this game until Thursday morning, October 14th, 2021, a mere 3 days before the game. The ceremony at which the number 21 was retired was rushed, was anticlimactic. The team unforgettably staged a photo op for Sean Taylor's family outside of FedEx Field in front of a bunch of portable toilets. Yes, that happened. The team had family and acquaintances of Chiefs players standing in an area near the field that included a painted number 21 on the turf, resulting in Jackson Mahomes, brother of Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, doing a TikTok dance on the painted number 21. The entire day was a giant, shameful, sloppy mess. You cannot overstate the extent to which that day was botched by the team.
There it is.
Yes, Jason, there it is. Then we had the do-over, November 27th, 2022, what was the 15th anniversary of the death of Sean Taylor, of him having been shot in an armed invasion of his home in Florida earlier in the month of November 2007. The Commanders, prior to a 19-13 win over the Atlanta Falcons at a rainy FedEx Field, unveiled what the team had said would be, quote, a permanent Sean Taylor memorial installation at FedEx Field, end quote. The installation, which a lot of people just assumed would be a statue, ended up being a wire mannequin in a Skins uniform that included Sean's number 21 jersey. And the installation came off as very underwhelming. And the installation, quite frankly, came off as very cheap. The installation looked like a mannequin in a clothing store. Now, the Commanders also unveiled a Sean Taylor mural that was created by Vic Garcia, the uncle of Sean's daughter, Jackie Taylor. The mural looked good. The installation did not look good.
There it is.
Yes, Jason, there it is. I love Sean Taylor as much as the next person. Him being killed in November 2007 was horrendous and should have never happened. But at least for now, I think that the right course of action is to let him be. Let him rest in peace and leave his family alone. Well, we always hope that you and your family are well, but if you have been harmed by the negligence of someone else, or if someone who you care about has been harmed by the negligence of someone else, always know that the great law firm of Paulson and Nace is there for you. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. Call 202-902-7611, and when you call, make sure that you tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson & Nace is a Washington, D.C.-based family law firm that handles medical malpractice, personal injury, birth injury, legal malpractice, and consumer protection cases, offering aggressive advocacy for victims in Washington, D.C. and West Virginia. Paulson & Nace has won millions of dollars for clients. It was named as part of U.S. News and World Report's Best Law Firms 2024 edition. Paulson & Nace fights for victims of all kinds of situations, including victims of errors made during diagnosis, during surgery, or with medication, victims of injuries caused by dangerous medications or medical devices, as well as defective auto parts, victims of accidents involving cars, trucks, bikes, or motorcycles, victims of deceptive trade practices and false advertising, heck, victims of shady lawyers. If your attorney acts in bad faith, is unethical in his or her counsel, or is negligent in his or her work, you could have a claim for legal malpractice. Paulson & Nace has represented corporate clients throughout the region. Attorneys Chris Nace and Matt Nace are experienced trial attorneys who are not afraid to take cases to trials, and that's because Paulson & Nace wins trials. If you feel that you've been wronged, if you think that you've been wronged but aren't sure, call Paulson & Nace and schedule a no-obligation appointment. Call 202-902-7611. That's 202-902-7611. And when you call, tell Paulson & Nace that Al Galdi sent you. You can also visit PaulsonAndNace.com. That's PaulsonAndNace.com. Just don't forget to tell Paulson & Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson & Nace, if you have a case, contact Paulson & Nace. Hey, if you are listening to this podcast via Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you can rate the podcast with a star rating. 5-star ratings are greatly appreciated. They help us out a lot. Thank you for doing them. The ramifications of the Commanders quarterback decision via their number 2 overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft will be felt for years. The difference between our team hitting on this decision versus missing on this decision can and likely will mean so much in terms of wins and playoff appearances and revenue and who knows what else. The very first conversation that I had with an NFL draft analyst about this quarterback decision was with Pro Football Focus lead NFL draft analyst Trevor Sikkema back in December on episode 715 of this podcast. We back then talked about North Carolina quarterback Drake May versus LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels. And the debate since then has grown exponentially, to say nothing of the injection of Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy into the mix. And so I'm very pleased to welcome Trevor Sikkema back to the podcast. He is joining us on this installment of the pod for part one of a 2-part conversation, as there is a lot that we need to cover. We in this part one are focusing on Drake May versus Jaden Daniels. Trevor Sikkema is one of the top NFL draft analysts. He is the co-host of a terrific NFL draft podcast, NFL Stock Exchange. You can follow Trevor on X at Tampa Bay Trey, and make sure that you check out PFF's mock draft simulator at pff.com/mock. It's your opportunity to become the general manager of your favorite team and select your favorite players in the 2024 NFL draft. That's pff.com/mock. And with the draft about a week away, PFF's big board can get you caught up on some of the best players in the 2024 draft. Head over to pff.com for some of the best analysis in football ahead of one of the biggest events on the football calendar. Trevor, it's nice to talk to you. How are you?
Al, it's so good to be with you, my friend. It's an exciting time, so I'm excited to talk a little bit of Commanders football here with you.
Yeah, excited to get your takes on these quarterbacks. When we first spoke this past December, you at that time had Drake May as your QB2 in the 2024 draft. Here we are 4 months later, and you still have May as the QB2. Looking at the top quarterbacks via the Pro Football Focus big board for the 2024 draft, USC's Caleb Williams is the number one player on the big board. Drake May is number three on the big board. Jaden Daniels is number 21 on the big board, and J.J. McCarthy is number 28 on the big board. So to you, is there much of a debate regarding Drake May versus Jaden Daniels?
Personally, I get it, right? Because it's a quarterback, right? You're trying to pick the one that is going to hit for you. And it's, look, if hitting on a quarterback was down to a science, we wouldn't really have to do this, right? We would just sit back and we'd watch these guys basically just to take quarterbacks to start the draft every single year. But the issue is that it's not. And there's a lot of things that go into picking the right quarterback or the highest ceiling quarterback, or sometimes even the highest floor quarterback, somebody that gives themselves the ability to grow and learn in this league. I'd be taking Drake May. I really would. I mean, he's my quarterback too. He has been pretty much wire to wire since this summer. Even with what people are saying, it was a down year in 2023, which I would even push back on that as well. I believe that Drake May gives you the ability to step up and hit every single throw in every single situation that is demanded of him, right? Do you need him to throw for 250 yards and be a more efficient quarterback? Okay, I guess maybe that's something that he's working on a little bit, not always being this gunslinger, but certainly when you talk about ceiling, okay, we're in a situation where we're in an arms race. We're trying to light up the scoreboard. You know, the final score of this bad boy is going to be 44-48. You know, I need a quarterback who has it in them to be able to put up those kinds of numbers. Drake May does, and he does it on all three levels of the field. And I mean that short, intermediate, and deep. And I also mean outside the numbers, between the numbers, and outside the numbers. He can do everything. I think he has that arm talent to be able to be that kind of a quarterback that you can lean on and depend on. Yeah, he's got to clean some things up with his fundamentals. He's got some frustrating misses this past year here, but all that stuff is correctable. And I think the natural God-given talent that he shows, that's the stuff that you got to gravitate towards. That's the stuff that I always keep going back to. So it's the overall arm talent. It's that mentality. It's just something that is, to me, very easily, I look at it and I go, yes, give me this dude to draft and develop and invest in. You throw in a little bit of mobility in there as well. Last 2 years, the start of the first year as an underclassman, the last year here as a junior, the offense was able to change for him. So you saw him in different areas and different situations. So I don't mean this to really be too much of a slight on Daniels. I do like Daniels, but the reason why there's such a gap between him and number 21 and Drake, who is at number three, is I just don't think that Daniel's arm talent is as good as those guys at the very top, as Caleb Williams and as Drake May. Now, I will say this to give Jaden Daniels his credit and his flowers. He has the best fundamentals of any quarterback in this class. Like, his throw is so repeatable and consistent that I totally understand why NFL teams go, man, give me that kind of consistency every single time. But I think that in the process of recognizing those fundamentals, recognizing how consistent that ball is when it comes out of his arm, we've been, and I've used this phrase before over the last month or so, romanticizing his arm talent a little bit. He has a good arm. He has an adequate arm for the NFL level, but it's not ripping through the wind like Caleb Williams and Drake May are able to show you on different platforms, scrambling, off balance, those kinds of things. And even when you're regularly set, it's not that type of arm talent, in my opinion. Then I also think that when we look at Jaden Daniels, a lot of people look at the rushing ability from him, you know, like how fast he is, how good of an athlete, and they just automatically say like, oh, great scrambling quarterback. He'll get out of the pocket and, you know, he'll make magic happen. He can throw it downfield. He has, but I'll give you a little bit of context here. He had less than half of the attempts on scrambles that even Michael Penix did. And Michael Penix never leaves the pocket. I think that was the stat for 2023, not 2022 and 2023. I think it was just this past year. Daniels just, he doesn't do that a lot. Like, and so like, if you want to praise Jaden Daniels, you can in a lot of ways. Really great RPO player, really great when obviously he's taken off to run. I think, again, the fundamentals are fantastic. The consistency is there. He takes care of the ball so well. He's improvement on his decision making because of how good his fundamentals are. The ball placement, the accuracy really has been nice to watch over the last couple of years, specifically 2023. But you don't have to make him something he's not, right? You don't have to say, okay, well, his arm talent's as good as Caleb Williams, because it's not. And you don't have to say like, oh, he's this great scrambler, this great passer outside the pocket, because he didn't do it very often. So that to me is just the overall, and I kind of get on a little bit of a roll and start rambling when I talk about these guys, because there's a lot of thoughts with quarterbacks. But when I think about Drake May versus Jaden Daniels, that's how I have that gap there. And I fully understand that you got to pay quarterback tax to go get one that you think has a Super Bowl type of ceiling. So even though I've got guys like Daniels and McCarthy in my 20s, I understand that the league's going to take him in the top 10 because it means everything in the world if you hit on these guys. But when you ask me as a scout and as an evaluator where these guys stand in my mind, that's kind of how I see these two different prospects.
I agree with you. I want the Commanders to take Drake May with their number 2 overall pick in the 2024 draft. You just did a great job of highlighting some of the biggest positives for May and Jaden Daniels. I'd like to hone in on the biggest perceived negatives with each guy. You mentioned the easy misses by May. That does come up a lot. Those easy misses are a function of what?
So I look at his footwork, and this is somebody who... You could tell that he's been playing a lot of quarterback. You could tell that he's also been probably the best player on the field most of the time throughout his life. And I think throughout high school and even in college a little bit, he's in this situation where because he's got really great mobility, I think that Drake May is always kind of a threat to take it outside of the tackles and run. You know, he plays a little bit like, it's not this bad, but he plays a little bit like your buddy. What he does in Madden, right? Where he hikes the ball, he looks at one receiver, and I'm not saying that he's a one-read quarterback, but there are certainly times throughout the year where he's realized that, okay, I have this great escapability. So, you know, if the first and second read aren't there, I'm always just going to take off and I can run. And that's kind of how people will play the game of Madden. And I see a little bit of that with Drake May. So because of that, I'm not trying to say that he can't go through progressions. I absolutely think that he can. So he's not a one-read type of a quarterback. The reason why I say that is because he gets a little bit of happy feet, right? Like the feet are always bouncing and light, which is a positive, but sometimes they're frenetic. Like sometimes the feet are light and they're bouncy, but they're not exactly married up with where his eyes are going or what he's thinking about doing with his arm to pass the football. Sometimes the feet are just moving, you know, like, and there's not really a rhyme or reason to it. And then all of a sudden you get these moments where he goes, oh, shoot, there it is. There's the throw. And the feet are kind of, you know, bouncing all over the place. And then he goes, okay, well, I got to get rid of this football. Like the throwing window's right here. So you'll see the footwork and where he's pointing. It's not always married up with when he is releasing the football. So to me, the big issue for him are those frustrating accuracy moments. And it comes from you like the characteristic that he's very light on his feet and that he's a natural athlete, but that's got to be in unison with what you're doing. Like again, when you watch Jaden Daniels, Jaden's also pretty light on his feet, but Jaden is light on his feet and he is just ready to throw at all times. And again, running the football, scrambling, is not really in how he's processing things. So his feet are never getting out from underneath him, if you will. He is always just, boom, it is a straight line from his feet to his shoulders and his chest, exactly where the ball is going to go. And so you'll see him bounce around and he's light, but it's all in unison. It's all compact. It's all married up together. Whereas May, I think, thinks about scrambling and escaping and things like that. Look, UNC's line wasn't great this past year, so you kind of got to take that into account as well. But that to me is just a habit. I think that you just have to improve with May and allow him to stay light on his feet, but be more compact, be more married up, be more ready to throw with a little bit more consistent accuracy.
With Jaden Daniels, there are three major concerns that come up a lot. One concern is that he's a big-time injury risk given his reckless running style and his thin frame. Another concern is that he only had one truly great collegiate season, which was this past season. So is he a one-year wonder, especially considering the terrific supporting cast that he had at LSU this past season? And a third concern is how he fares in the Pro Football Focus metric pressure to sack rate. Daniels has the 7th worst career pressure to sack rate out of 116 quarterback prospects for the 2016 through 2024 NFL drafts, 24.5. Now, his pressure to sack rate for just the 2023 season was better, 20.2, And it's not like Drake May's career pressure to sack rate is great, 18.9, though that is a lot better than 24.5. And we know that pressure to sack rate is very predictive for quarterbacks. Which concern about Jaden Daniels do you find to be most valid?
I think that, well, look, I think that they're all valid concerns in a vacuum, but I will say the one that I care about the least is the 1 year wonder from him. And the reason why is because when you go back and you look at Jaden Daniels' entire college football career, his trajectory, think about what he was at Arizona State. Really just this one read, I'm going to throw it deep vertical or I'm going to take off and run. Like that was basically the only, you weren't really getting reading the field. You weren't really getting like standing tall in the pocket and taking pressure. Like he was taken off of the football if his first read wasn't open when he was at Arizona State. So then he gets over to LSU and you can tell in that first year, so this is a 2022 season, you can tell that he said to himself, I'm going to take care of the football, right? If I'm going to play in the SEC and if I'm going to be an SEC quarterback and I'm going to get this starting job, I cannot turn the football over. So he really honed in on lowering those turnovers and turnover worthy plays. And he had one of the lowest turnover worthy play rates in the country because of it. Now, everything else kind of went down, right? The touchdowns went down. The big time throws went down. The average depth of target went down. He was simply more conservative. He did not want to turn the ball over. This past year, he took those lessons that he had learned about really taking care of the football, but then he said, okay, I've got to ramp it back up now. And you kind of saw that best of both worlds from him this past year. So I'm not really worried about the 1 year wonder thing because there is a explainable path to how he got to that point. It wasn't just like, Jaden wasn't very good. It's kind of all over the place. And then boom, 1 year, it all like clicked for some reason. You can look back and see exactly why each year got better to what we saw this past season. Now, is it going to be exactly what we saw in 2023 at the NFL level? Well, you know, that's a question that will not be answered until he really gets to that phase and we really get to see him there. The injury stuff I am worried about, genuinely, because again, and this is kind of married a little bit to the sack to pressure ratio that we're going to talk about in a second. In order to really feel like, in order to really feel like he's a number two quarterback in this class, like, right, let's talk about it in the sense for Washington. Like, you would take him behind Caleb Williams. You would have to justify his athletic ability. You would have to justify the fact that he could bring that to your offense. And if that's the case, if you're doing that, then you have to face, okay, well, he really does not know how to protect his body. And he is rail thin. And that is not a good combination at the NFL level. I mean, these hits are too hard. They're too fast. He's going to get hurt. And I hope that he has the healthiest career and it's a Hall of Fame career and he never misses a game. But the style that he played at LSU, if you're plopping that in the NFL level, I am afraid that he is going to get hurt. So in order to truly convince yourself, because if you told me, well, we're not going to have him run that much anyways, then I would tell you, then why are you not picking Drake May or JJ McCarthy? Right? Like, why are you not doing that instead? You pick Daniels because of that dual threat ability that he gives you. And then that is kind of married to the sack to pressure ratio because, like I said earlier, he's not looking to leave the pocket. He's not looking to become this scrambler. He does not want to do it. He had 16 total attempts as a scrambler outside the pocket this past year. 16. He just, and the reason why the pressure to sack ratio is so high for him is because when that pressure comes in, he's trying to step up within the pocket. He's trying to avoid the pressure, but he's not looking to like bail all the way to the outside and then give you a throwaway. It's just not how he sees it right now. So that is very similar to the rushing ability where you go, okay, well, if you diminish one, like if you diminish the rushing ability more because you don't want him to get hurt, well, then guess what? That pressure to sack ratio is probably not going to change. Like you're going to have to deal with that. And then if you want to teach him, if you want to say to him, if you want to empower Daniels to say, hey, you're a great athlete. Let's get you on the run a little bit more. Let's work on this with you. Well, then all of a sudden, the pressure to sack ratio will probably get better, but he also puts himself in danger a little bit more with getting hurt. So it's a little bit of a double-edged sword, a catch-22, whatever you want to say there for him. So that's how I would see those three questions. Not really worried about the one-year wonder part of it, but the other two, I think, are big reasons, again, why there is a gap to me between Caleb Williams, Drake May, and then these other two quarterbacks that we have here in the 20s between him and McCarthy.
And we, in part two of our conversation, will get your breakdown of J.J. McCarthy, as well as your thoughts on the Commanders trading quarterback Sam Howell, and on how the team should navigate offensive tackle. The 2024 draft is viewed as a great draft for offensive tackle. Should the Commanders, via their 2 second-round picks and 3 third-round picks, trade back into the first round? All of that and more in part two. But Trevor, thank you for part one, and we'll talk soon.
Appreciate it, Al. Anytime, my friend.
All right, Pro Football Focus lead NFL draft analyst Trevor Sikkema. Nova Fireplace and Stove. It is offering a great deal for listeners of the Al Galdi podcast who live in Northern Virginia. $25 off any gas fireplace service, chimney cleaning, or chimney inspection. Save yourself some money and get great service. Just call Nova Fireplace and Stove, 571-513-3803. Talk to Stuart Moore. He is the general manager. He's a big Commanders fan. He's a loyal listener of this podcast. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. And if you have a masonry fireplace, Nova Fireplace and Stove is offering another deal to listeners of the Al Galdi podcast who live in Northern Virginia, an in-stock wood insert at an extremely discounted price, just $6,000 plus tax. The usual price is $9,000 plus tax. So this is a 33% discount, and the $6,000 plus tax includes installation, permit, and county/city inspection. And you can get a government-funded tax credit as well, up to $2,000, dropping the price to just $4,000. All things considered, call 571-513-3803 and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. Nova Fireplace and Stove is outstanding. It is family-owned. It is a 5-star dealer. Visit NovaFireplaceAndStove.com to check out customer reviews and call Nova Fireplace and Stove, 571-513-3803. Nova Fireplace and Stove also installs generators, water heaters, security lights, and custom outdoor kitchens. There is so much that Nova Fireplace and Stove can do for you. Contact Nova Fireplace and Stove and get the customer service that you deserve. 571-513-3803. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. That's Nova Fireplace and Stove, 571-513-3803. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Well, the Capitals did it. They made the Stanley Cup playoffs in a season in which the Caps were retooling, in a season in which the Caps were sellers regarding the NHL trade deadline, in a season in which the Caps for the regular season had a goal differential of minus 37, which is poised to go down as the worst regular season goal differential for an NHL playoff team in the league's salary cap era, which began with the 2005-2006 season. In a season in which the Caps had a rookie head coach. In a season in which the guy who was supposed to be the Caps' number one goaltender was so bad that he barely played for so much of the season. In a season in which the best player in team history, top line left wing Alex Ovechkin, got off to a frighteningly slow start in terms of scoring goals. In a season in which not one, but two Caps players entered the NHL's and NHL Players Association's Player Assistance Program. In a season in which one of the best players in Caps history, center Nicklas Backstrom, did not play in a game after October 29th due to his chronically bad left hip. In a season in which all of this and more were in effect, the Caps made the Stanley Cup playoffs. What a job by President of Hockey Operations and General Manager Brian McClellan, Head Coach Spencer Carberry, and the players. The Caps this season have made the Stanley Cup playoffs for a 33rd time in 41 seasons. No team in Washington, D.C. area sports has come close to making postseason appearances with the frequency with which the Caps have made the Stanley Cup playoffs. But this, to me, is the most improbable Caps playoff season in franchise history. The Caps concluded their 2023-2024 regular season with a game at the Philadelphia Flyers on Tuesday night. If the Caps won the game in any fashion, they clinched the Eastern Conference's second and final wildcard spot, and the Caps won. A 2-1 win at the Flyers. What a wild last few weeks for the Caps. They concluded their regular season by winning each of their last three games in regulation. This was off the Caps having gone just 1-5-2 over their previous eight games, and that was off the Caps having gone 13-5-1 over their previous 19 games. Quite the roller coaster ride that our Capitals took us on these last few weeks. Charlie Lindgren. How about this guy, the man known as the Outlaw? He came through once again. He on Tuesday night was the Caps starting goaltender for the 34th time in 43 games, and he was good yet again. He stopped 27 of the 28 shots on goal that he faced, including all 13 of the shots on goal that he faced in the third period. Lindgren, per Natural Stat Trick, stopped 7 of the 8 high-danger shots on goal that he faced, stopped all 3 of the medium-danger shots on goal that he faced, and stopped all 16 of the low-danger shots on goal that he faced. And he was tested. The Caps won this game despite losing the puck possession battle. They had just 18 shots on goal to the Flyers' 28, and per Natural Stat Trick had 54 5-on-5 shot attempts to the Flyers' 66, including 8 5-on-5 high-danger shot attempts to the Flyers' 12. But Lindgren was good once again. The Caps went 1-of-1 on the penalty kill. The Caps did not have a single power play the entire game. The Caps needed Lindgren to be good, and he was good. And I will give his teammates credit in this regard. The Caps had 32 block shots, tied for the team's most block shots in a game in this regular season. But let's take a moment to further appreciate the Outlaw. The Caps on July 13th, 2022, what was day one of NHL free agency that offseason, announced having signed two unrestricted free agent goaltenders, Darcy Kemper and Charlie Lindgren. Kemper got a 5-year, $26.25 million contract. Lindgren got a 3-year, $3.3 million contract. Kemper last season was so-so. Kemper this season was outplayed by Lindgren, to where Kemper was supplanted by Lindgren as the Caps starting goaltender I feel like this has not gotten enough attention. Again, Lindgren was the Caps starting goaltender for 34 of the team's final 43 games in this regular season. Think about that. As for the Caps' goals in this 2-1 playoff spot clinching win at the Flyers on Tuesday night, Alex Ovechkin, he scored. He scored an even strength goal 18:08 into the first period for a 1-0 Caps lead and for his team leading 31st goal of the regular season. He in the game had just one shot on goal, but he did have seven total shot attempts. And top line right wing, TJ Oshie, he scored an even strength empty net goal exactly 17 minutes into the third period for a 2-1 Caps lead and for his 12th goal of the regular season. He also had a secondary assist on Alex Ovechkin's goal. The Caps did have fourth line left wing Beck Malenstein off him having left the Caps previous game, the 2-0 win over the Atlantic Division leading Boston Bruins at Capital One Arena on Monday night due to an upper body injury. But the Caps remained without multiple key defensemen. Defenseman Nick Jensen remains out due to injury that he suffered in taking that nasty hit from Tampa Bay Lightning forward Michael Asimont in the Caps 4-2 win over the Eastern Conference wildcard leading Lightning at Capital One Arena this past Saturday evening. Defenseman Rasmus Sandin remains out due to an upper body injury that he suffered in the Caps 3-2 overtime loss to the Ottawa Senators at Capital One Arena on April 7th. And defenseman Ethan Bear remains out due to being in the NHL's and NHL Players Association's Player Assistance Program. And so next up for the Caps is a best-of-seven series against the Metropolitan Division-winning and President's Trophy-winning New York Rangers in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We don't yet know the schedule for that series, so the Caps have played the Rangers in the Stanley Cup playoffs a ton over the years. The series will not be easy. The Caps will be significant underdogs in the series. But A, the Stanley Cup playoffs, as we know as Caps fans, are wildly unpredictable, and B, in this improbable season for the Caps, do not discount the possibility of anything happening. Here was the final call of the Caps 2-1 win at the Flyers on Tuesday night. John Walton on the Washington Capitals Radio Network.
Malenstein and Oshie ready alongside, and it's won cleanly. Back to Carlson. He feeds it out to center. Start spreading the news. The Capitals are going to the postseason. They are going to the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Philadelphia. The Capitals take on the Rangers in game one this weekend at Madison Square Garden. The party on the ice down below. The Capitals have done it. They are going to the postseason after beating the Flyers. Final score 2-1.
Yes, sir. The Caps conclude their 2023-2024 regular season 40-31-11 and with 91 points. Outstanding work by the Caps to make the postseason. Well, the hope is that the Nationals, sooner rather than later, will be able to say that they have one of the best players in the majors, or maybe even several of the best players in the majors. You think about outfield prospects James Wood and Dylan Cruz. You think about shortstop CJ Abrams. But we are not there yet. And the Nats, late night on Tuesday night, got victimized by a man who most certainly is one of the best players in the majors, Mookie Betts. The Nats lost at the Los Angeles Dodgers 6-2 in Game 2 of a three-game series. The Nats on their nine-game road trip in California now are 4-4, and for this 2024 MLB regular season now are 7-10. Betts, as the Dodgers' starting shortstop and number one batter, went 5-for-5. He had an RBI double, another double, an RBI single, and two other singles. Betts for this regular season is number two among all qualified players in the majors in OPS at 1,190. But believe it or not, The Nats' Jesse Winker for this regular season is number one among all qualified players in the majors in on-base percentage, .500, one spot ahead of Betts at .490. And Winker for this regular season is number five among all qualified players in the majors in OPS at 1,108. Jesse Winker continues to do well. He late night on Tuesday night was the Nats starting designated hitter and number two batter. He went 2-for-3 with a two-run homer, a double, and a hit by pitch. Winker in the top of the first had a double to right field. Winker in the Nats, a two-run third, had a one-out full count, two-run homer on a bomb to center field to cut the Nats deficit to 3-2. The homer went a projected 429 feet per Statcast, and Winker in the top of the eighth drew a two-out hit by pitch. The Nats on February 13th signed Winker to a minor league contract with a non-roster invitation to major league spring training. And yet here we are with him number one among all qualified players in the majors in on-base percentage and number five among all qualified players in the majors in OPS. I mentioned Jesse Winker having a double in the top of the first. Thrown out at home on that double was C.J. Abrams. We're not used to seeing him thrown out on the base pass like that. Abrams late night on Tuesday night as the Nats starting shortstop and number one batter went 1-for-3 with a single and a walk. He at the top of the first had a leadoff full count single to center field despite having been down in the count at 1.12, but he then was thrown out at home on that Jesse Winker double to right field. But Abrams later in the game drew a great walk. He, in the top of the eighth, drew a two-out, 10-pitch walk despite having been down in the count at 1.12. You know, an underrated aspect of this rise of C.J. Abrams is him drawing walks. He, for the entire 2023 regular season, drew just 32 walks. He, in this regular season, already has 6 walks. But the Nats, in this 6-2 loss at the Dodgers, did not hit well overall. Just 2 runs, just 6 hits, just 1 walk. The Nats went 2-for-7 with runners in scoring position. The Dodgers went with a bullpen game, and the Nats got shut down. The Nats starting pitcher for this 6-2 loss at the Dodgers late night on Tuesday night was Patrick Corbin, and he was bad once again. He officially allowed 5 runs in 6 and a third innings. He gave up 9 hits, which were made up of a homer, 2 doubles, and 6 singles. He issued 4 walks, one of which was intentional. He did record 5 strikeouts, and he did throw a pretty good number of strikes, 96 pitches, 60 strikes versus 36 balls. But still, 5 runs in 6 and a third innings. Corbin now, over 4 starts in this regular season, has an ERA of 8.06 and a whip of 1.97. This is his age 34 season and the 6th and final season of the 6-year, $140 million contract that the Nats signed him to as a free agent in December 2018. He has been a really bad pitcher in each of the last 5 seasons now, 2020 through 2024. The hope, if he continues to be bad, is that he is out of the Nats rotation at some point this season. But the Nats, while they have some highly regarded position playing prospects, do not have many highly regarded pitching prospects, and especially with starting pitcher Josiah Gray on the 15-day injured list due to a right elbow slash right forearm flexor strain, and with starting pitcher Cade Cavalli on the 60-day injured list due to his recovery from Tommy John surgery that he underwent in March 2023. I'm not holding my breath on Corbin being out of the rotation anytime soon, even with as bad as he has been so far in this regular season. The Nats bullpen late night on Tuesday night. 2 Nats relievers officially combined to allow 1 run in 1 2/3 innings. Derek Law faced 3 batters and got 2 outs. He came into the game in the bottom of the 7th with runners at the corners, 1 out, and the Nats down 4-2. He, to the first batter he faced, gave up a 1 out RBI infield single by Teoscar Hernandez on a tapper to the third base side of the infield for a 5-2 Dodgers lead. So some bad luck for Derek Law there, although Law, for some reason, touched the baseball before it went foul. And the baseball looked like it was going to go foul. But Law, to his credit, then generated back-to-back swinging strikeouts of pinch hitters Max Muncy and James Outman. And then Tanner Rainey allowed a run in the bottom of the eighth, during which he gave up a double, an RBI single, an infield single, and a walk. Rainey threw 26 pitches, just 14 strikes versus 12 balls. He does not look right as he comes back from Tommy John surgery that he underwent in August 2022. And so we are now seeing Rainey being relegated to mop-up duty. This is a guy who was the Nats closer at one point. Game 3 for the Nats at the Dodgers Wednesday afternoon at 3:10. Jake Irvin will be the Nats starting pitcher.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, the streak now is at 4. The Orioles now have hit exactly 3 home runs in each of the team's last 4 games. First time that the O's have hit at least 3 home runs in each of at least 4 consecutive regular season games since May 2013. Tuesday evening, an 11-3 win over the Minnesota Twins at Oriole Park at Camden Yards in game 2 of a 3-game series. As the O's, Joe Angel, again, we're in the win column.
And the Orioles, again, in the win column.
That is correct, Joe. The win column. The O's now have won 3 consecutive games and 6 of the team's last 8 games. And the O's in this 2024 MLB regular season now are 11-6. Now, before we go any further, there was some bad Orioles news on Tuesday. The team on Tuesday evening announced having placed starting pitcher Tyler Wells on the 15-day injured list, retroactive to April 13th, due to right elbow inflammation. That is not good. Wells had not pitched well over his first 3 starts of this regular season. He had his last start, the 11-1 loss to the Milwaukee Brewers at Oriole Park at Camden Yards this past Friday night, allowed 4 runs in 4 innings. The O's already have starting pitchers Kyle Bradish and John Means on the 15-day injured list, although each guy has begun minor league rehab work. Wells was supposed to start Game 3 of this series against the Twins. The Orioles starting pitcher for that game was TBD, to be determined, as of Tuesday night. Here was O's manager Brandon Hyde during his postgame press conference on Tuesday night, and you'll hear multiple follow-up exchanges. Hyde on what's going on with Tyler Wells.
You know, we're staying optimistic about it. We decided to, for precautionary reasons, to put him on the IL with right elbow soreness. But we're really confident that he's going to be okay and that it's not going to be too long.
Who's going to be your starter tomorrow?
We're talking about that right now.
With Wells, is this something that creeped up in his most recent start or in a bullpen session?
I think it's after his last start, he just had a little bit more soreness than normal and just didn't quite go away. That's why we kind of were waiting and just felt like the right thing to do from a precautionary standpoint, if he felt anything at all, was to put him on the IL and give him a couple weeks off.
All right, and we hope for the best for Tyler Wells. But yeah, the O's right now are smashing home runs. The O's on Tuesday evening were so good offensively, they scored 11 runs. The O's pounded 15 hits, which were comprised of 3 home runs, 2 doubles, and 10 singles. The O's worked 2 walks. The O's went 5 for 12 with runners in scoring position. Gunnar Henderson, he is the Orioles starting shortstop and number one batter, went 3 for 5 with a 2-run homer, an RBI single, and another single. He ended Orioles a 3-run second, had a 2-out first pitch, a 2-run homer to right field for a 3-0 Orioles lead as he homered for a second consecutive game. And Henderson ended Orioles a 4-run third, had a 2-out opposite field RBI single through the left side of the infield for a 7-0 Orioles lead, despite having been down in the count at 1.12. Gunnar Henderson for this regular season now has an OPS of 903. Ryan O'Hearn, he homered for a 3rd consecutive game. He is the Orioles starting first baseman and number 3 batter, went 2 for 5 with a 2-run homer and a single. He hit Orioles a 2-run 8th, had a 2-run homer to right center field for an 11-2 Orioles lead, despite having been down in the count at 1.12. The homer came off O'Hearn having been robbed of at least an extra base hit and maybe a home run by twin center fielder Byron Buxton, who made a great leaping catch of a deep fly ball by O'Hearn for the first out in an Orioles 1-run 6. But Ryan O'Hearn for this regular season now has an OPS of 1,089. Jordan Westberg, he is the Orioles starting third baseman and number 7 batter, went 2 for 4 with a 2-run homer and a double. Westberg in the Orioles 4-run third had a 2-out first pitch 2-run homer over the Great Wall of Baltimore at left field for a 6-0 Orioles lead. The homer went a projected 404 feet per Statcast. Jordan Westberg for this regular season now has an OPS of 995. And the milkman, Colton Cowser, he remains hot. He is the Orioles starting left fielder and number 6 batter, went 2 for 4 with an RBI single, another single, and an RBI ground out. Cowser for this regular season now has an OPS of 1,268. Not bad. Jackson Holliday did not have a hit, but he did draw his first major league regular season walk. He is the Orioles starting second baseman and number 8 batter, went 0 for 3 with a walk and 2 strikeouts. But I tell you, as good as the Orioles offense was in this 11-3 win over the Twins on Tuesday evening, maybe the most encouraging thing from this game was Grayson Rodriguez being good for a 4th time in 4 starts in this regular season. With these starting pitcher injuries that the O's are dealing with, they need Rodriguez to be good, and he has been good. Grayrod is delivering. Rodriguez on Tuesday evening allowed 2 runs in 6 innings with 6 strikeouts. He gave up just 4 hits, which were a triple, a double, and 2 singles. He issued 3 walks and a wild pitch. He threw 87 pitches, 56 strikes versus 31 balls. Grayson Rodriguez over 4 starts, ERA at 2.63, a strikeouts per 9 innings of 10.13. Terrific. Brandon Hyde, during his post-game press conference on Tuesday night, on the performance of Grayson Rodriguez.
Yeah, and I didn't really think he had his fastball command very well. I mean, for me, he was missing a lot up, and he still got areas to improve, and you see the talent, and you see the stuff. And he's going to have a chance to be dominating at times, and you know, he was really good tonight. Just the fastball command, he was really good without the fastball command that he has had the first few starts.
And that is the mark of a good starting pitcher, that he can be good even when he doesn't have his best stuff. The Orioles bullpen in this 11-3 win over the Twins on Tuesday evening was fine. 2 Orioles relievers combined to allow 1 run in 3 innings. Johan Ramirez tossed 1 2/3 scoreless innings, and Mike Bauman allowed a run in 1 1/3 innings. So, Game 3 for the O's against the Twins at Oriole Park at Camden Yards Wednesday afternoon at 1:05, and we shall see who the Orioles starting pitcher is. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me, the Al Galdi Podcast at yahoo.com. Thursday show, episode 808. We'll provide you with more on the Commanders. Also on Thursday's show, I'll talk Nationals and Orioles. The Nats have Game 3 of their three-game series at the Los Angeles Dodgers Wednesday afternoon at 3:10. The O's have Game 3 of their three-game series against the Minnesota Twins at Oriole Park at Camden Yards Wednesday afternoon at 1:05. Have a great rest of your Wednesday, and I'll talk to you on Thursday.
There it is.